From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
While I had that position, I had been recruited by the Detroit NAACP, which, by the way, was the largest chapter.
Right.
Now, I'm only about 24 at the time. So I took that position. Well, during that period, there was a major court battle over school desegregation. People may not remember Judge Damon Keith, federal Judge Damon Keith, and he had ruled in some very controversial landmark desegregation cases. Matter of fact, the first northern school desegregation case out of Pontiac, Michigan, which was a suburb of Detroit. And then there was the Milliken versus Bradley decision. And this case involved suburban cross-district busing, cross-district school desegregation. And as the executive director of the in Detroit branch, I was called on to discuss on talk radio shows the issue.
Joe Madison, the Black Eagle, the award-winning national talk show host on Sirius XM Urban View Radio. Madison is on the case daily, talking about politics and social activism, while challenging the status quo, ensuring that people of color are not undervalued, underestimated, or marginalized. Madison has been named one of Talkers Magazine's 10 most important radio talk show hosts in America for 11 consecutive years. In June 2015, Madison made history by broadcasting live from Cuba, becoming the first national talk show host in America to do so in more than 50 years. Madison spent his young adult life in various positions in the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and was selected executive director of Detroit's NAACP branch at the age of 24. In 1980, he began his broadcasting career at Detroit's legendary WXYZ AM radio station. I'm Johnny O. Henson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, national radio talk show host Joe Madison, In Black America.
At Sirius XM, they, on our channel, Urban View, they always ask us every February, what are your plans for Black History Month?
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people do the standard dates, inventions, accomplishments, and that type of thing. I decided, I want to help raise money for Lonnie Bunch, Dr. Lonnie Bunch, because he's a very good friend of mine, and help raise money for the museum, because the museum had to literally raise hundreds of millions of dollars. And one of the things that I decided to do was a talk show marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And so the purpose was to break the Guinness Book of World Record. Now, we researched it, found out there was a world record for continuous talk show broadcast, which, by the way, at the time, the record was held by a talk show host somewhere in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
The talk personality was raising money for a young lady that needed an operation. And so we researched it, I looked it up, and I said, that's what I'm going to do for the museum.
Joe Madison has made a name for himself as a national radio talk show host and civil rights activist. He can be heard every weekday morning on Sirius XM Urban View. Born and raised in Dayton, Ohio, Madison maintained a close relationship with his parents and grandparents who were influential during his youth. He received a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology from Washington University in St. Louis. During college, he was an all-conference running back and baritone soloist with the University Concert Choir. Also during college, he was a statistician for the St. Louis Cardinal Football Club. Madison spent his young adult life in various positions with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and was selected executive director of Detroit's NAACP branch at the age of 24. He is the youngest person to be appointed to the position. In 1978, then-president and CEO of the NAACP, Dr. Benjamin L. Hooks, recognized Madison's leadership skills and promoted him to director of the NAACP Political Action Department. From February 25th through 27, 2015, Madison broke a Guinness World Record by broadcasting 52 hours and raising over $200,000 for the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. Recently, In Black America spoke with the Black Eagle, Joe Madison.
Well, gee, I mean, you know, Ohio is, what can I say? I spent the first 18 years of my life there. In Dayton, Ohio, Roosevelt High School, west side of Dayton. What fascinates my wife, who, by the way, is from Los Angeles, and we've been married now for, it'll be 40 years in January. She is absolutely amazed, John, how the people I grew up with and those who are still with us were like family. She says, I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen people who, you know, if somebody gets sick, it's like we hear from 200 or 300 people. If someone has a new child, we hear from 200 or 300 people. She said, you know, she says, you guys are like it's family. Mm-hmm. And, but that's what it was like, because pretty much everybody grew up on one side of town across the river. You know, you got to, when I think of it, I think of the folks who come out of there, the cultural aspect of it. I mean, I was, growing up with the Ohio Players,
right,
who, you know, we were in choir together, then there are other folks culturally, you know, people at my high school. Oh, man, we at Roosevelt, we had the number one basketball player in the state, Rudy Benjamin.
Mm-hmm.
We're still best friends, and the number one football player in the state in the same class, in the same high school, Leo Hayden. And then I can't even begin to tell you, but I don't want it to all sound like just sports, because a lot of folk went on and did amazing things academically.
Right.
I mean, it really was a cool place to grow up. And as my wife reminds me, you know, you guys are just, she says, and she's from Los Angeles. She
right.
says, half the folk I don't even remember, mm-hmm. and the other half I don't even care about. You know, I always tell people, it's like you had the community, you had the church, you
right.
had the teachers, you had, I mean, you just had a lot of folk who took care of you, looked after you, encouraged you to be the best that you can be, no matter what obstacles you might face. I mean, I always tell, look, man, I always tell when I give speeches, John, I always tell this joke in part. I said, when I grew up, I had a big, big, major drug problem when I was a young person growing up in Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
I was drugged to church every Sunday. I was drugged to the woodshed if I talked ill to parents or preachers. I was drugged by my ears if I didn't give the best effort I could and put forth, if I brought home a bad report card. And it's those drugs, quite honestly, as I always tell people, that are still in my veins today.
No, that's right. What led you to major in sociology at Washington University?
The times. I mean, you have to understand, we're talking about a period in time where there was, we're almost, 50 years past the Kerner Commission
right.
report. Matter of fact, I bring that up because just earlier this week, the former governor of Virginia, L. Douglas Wilder, who became the first black governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, spoke at and keynoted the L. Douglas Wilder Symposium at Virginia Commonwealth University, VCU, mm-hmm. in which we examined 50 years after the Kerner Commission. Now, people may not remember the Kerner Commission was put together after the 1965, 66, 67 riots.
Right.
Because Johnson, at the time, President Johnson, wanted to know what caused these civil disobedience, what caused the riots, and not only what caused them, but what needed to be done to prevent them from happening again. So, one of my favorite classes in high school at the time was human rights mm-hmm. course that they taught. It was an elective, and I loved that course. And one of the things I loved about it, matter of fact, I can remember the teacher, Mrs. Dorothy Bush.
Okay.
And one of the practices that we used to have every week in that class was we would take an issue and we had to debate both sides of the issue. In other words, she taught me and others how to be critical thinkers. And so when you grow up on the cuff of the civil rights movement, you grow up with what was happening in the country at the time. I mean, look at, you know, when I graduated from high school, you know, Thurgood Marshall had been appointed to the United States Supreme Court as the first African American. He had become the first attorney, Solicitor General. Martin Luther King, a year later had been assassinated. A year after 1968, Bobby Kennedy a few months after that. When I entered high school, my freshman year, what happened? President John Kennedy was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm X was very vocal. And those are the people on the national level, let alone some people in our own community
mm-hmm.
Who are doing things, attempting to change society, attempting to change culture. And opening up doors of opportunity. So sociology was just a natural for me. I must admit, I had originally wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't do too well in Latin, so I changed my major. Because in those days, you couldn't be a doctor unless you mastered or were very proficient in Latin. That's one of the reasons. And Washington University in St. Louis had a first-rate sociology department. They gave it up after some years,
mm-hmm.
but I found out. Not too long ago, that they have reinstituted the major.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just talking to the chancellor, Mark Wrighton, and some of the administrators there, and I told him you couldn't have begun the major again, reinstating sociology as a major. Again, if there's ever a time it's needed, it certainly is in this day and age that we're dealing with.
Prior to your work with the Detroit branch of the NAACP, I understand that you were in public relations at General Motors and a statistician for the St. Louis Cardinal Football Club?
Well, you're going way back. That was a summer job that I had. The statistician with the football Cardinals, the
mm-hmm.
St. Louis football Cardinals, I played football for Washington University.
Right.
And we were on a trip, I think out west, and the public relations director of the St. Louis football Cardinals was with us on the trip, and I was introduced to him by the coach, the late Dick Martin,
mm-hmm.
who was just a great man, and we talked on the flight going out west, and he said, you know, hey, how would you like to have a part-time job? with us. And I said, oh, man, absolutely. Well, look, let me tell you, I would have done it for free, but it was every home game.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with the statisticians. In other words, you know, what yard is the ball on?
Right.
You know, how many yards does it have to go? Now I'm playing football again for Washington U.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing I always remember about it was I went to the games free of charge. I sat in a press box free of charge. And I had all the cold-cut sandwiches I could
right.
eat and all the Budweiser I could drink. and on top of that, I got a check. But also, I had access to the players
mm-hmm.
and the locker room and the stadium. And I got to know many of the players, and I used to work out with them.
Right.
They would, you know, Charlie Wilson, Sid Edwards, Jamie Rivers, Ernie McMillan, it was like heaven for me. So it was really a part-time job to earn a little extra money while I was in school.
No, that's right.
Now, General Motors, that was with Frigidaire Division, because
okay.
Frigidaire at the time, they made Frigidaires in
mm-hmm.
the United States, and in particularly in Dayton. And General Motors, it was a division of General Motors. And that was a summer internship. I got that job. I don't know what caused me to do it, but I somehow either met or saw the director of the department. I walked into his office saying, I'm looking for a summer job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to work here. And instead of him sending me to the factory floor of the assembly line, he said, look, if this young African American can walk into my office and ask for this job, ask for a job, a summer job, I'm going to give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
And John, my assignment was one as an intern. One of my assignments every day was to sit down with a stack of about 20 newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
I can visualize it now, and go through every page of that newspaper, and wherever I saw the name Frigidaire,
yeah, right.
I was supposed to cut that article out, put it in a pile, make these articles.
Mm-hmm.
And give it to the director of the public relations department, who would then pass it on to the general manager of Frigidaire. Now, you say, in this day and age, you know, you wouldn't do that because everything is social media.
Right.
You know, it's all social media. I mean, all you have to do is Google,
mm-hmm.
and damn near everything
it
shows up.
Right.
Now, let me tell you what that did for me. Can you imagine? Every morning, reading newspapers
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
from all over the country,
right.
and having to go page by page. So isn't it amazing how one thing could lead to another? And so I just learned, I just read, and I would.
Right.
And you know, so in the first part of the morning, almost until lunchtime, you know, I'm one of the most well-versed young teenagers in the city, because I'm reading newspapers from Denver, from Columbus, from Los Angeles, from all over the country.
Mm-hmm. I know that's right. If you're just joining us, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr., and you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio. And we're speaking with Joe Madison, the Black Eagle, XM Sirius Radio talk show host. Joe, we're going to skip the NAACP part. I will include that in my narration. Your first broadcasting job was with our legendary WXYZ AM. How did you become interested in broadcasting?
Well, that job, that position came about because it's the part you skipped. I ended up in Detroit and working as a urban affairs specialist at a black public relation firm, Seymour and Lundy. Now, remember, this is a few years after the riots, the Kerner Commission. Corporations were trying to reconcile their relationship with the black community. This was before Coleman Young became mayor. But while I had that position, I had been recruited by the Detroit NAACP, which, by the way, was the largest chapter.
Right.
Now, I'm only about 24 at the time. And so I took that position. Well, during that period, there was a major court battle over school desegregation. People may not remember.
Right.
Judge Damon Keith.
Keith, right.
Federal Judge Damon Keith. And he had ruled in some very controversial landmark desegregation cases. Matter of fact, the first Northern school desegregation case out of Pontiac, Michigan,
exactly.
Which was a suburb of Detroit.
Exactly.
And then there was the Milliken versus Bradley decision. And this case involved suburban cross-district busing, cross-district school desegregation. And as the executive director of the in Detroit branch, I was called on to discuss on talk radio shows the issues.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyers would brief me, and I would end up like today's shows. These were all news shows, and talk radio was hot at the time. And I would end up debating some of the lawyers on the opposite side. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I pretty much could hold my own.
Right.
And it was one day the program director came to me after one of the debates and said, we've got an opening for a weekend spot. Would you be interested? And I sure, you know, why not? Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I began working for WXYZ at the time. Now, you call it legendary because a lot of people may not remember. That was the home of the Green Hornet,
right,
of Soupy Sales, of the Long Ranger. Now, they had since long been off the radio, but it was an all-talk AM station.
AM station, right.
And I did that. Actually, I did that for about 10 years. Every weekend, I would travel. I had my position with the Detroit chapter on Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go in and do 4 hours, and that's how I got started in talk radio, and eventually it just led to a career. And gee, man, that had to be John. That was well over 35 years ago. And that's how, in essence, I got started. I remember telling the program director, because you always want to do your best. You always want to be prepared, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, look, I didn't major in communications. I didn't major in journalism, so I'll go to communication school. I'll go to broadcasting school, because at that time they had several.
Right.
Broadcast, and he immediately said, oh, no, you won't.
No.
I said, what? He said, no, you won't. He says, because anything they teach you in broadcasting school, we're going to have to undo it. So you're going to learn here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to learn with some of the best broadcasters in the country. We're right there at that station.
I can concur with that because I learned broadcasting at WJLB.
Downtown
Detroit. So they were absolutely correct. They told me, no, don't go to broadcasting school. We're going to teach you what you need to know here.
Well, we'll teach you. We know you got raw talent. We know you got the ability. As long as you are willing to listen and learn, you know. And do you know who is a good friend of ours to this day?
Who's that?
Donnie Simpson.
Right, right. Donnie and I graduated from different high schools a year apart. Donnie went to Denby, and I went to Pershing. And Donnie graduated in 69, and I graduated in 68. And I had the position he had at JLB as a team reporter once I left to attend college.
And I remember team reporters. Wouldn't it be great if – the thing is, wouldn't it be great to have those team reporters today?
Yes, it would.
You're absolutely right. I remember those. You were a teen reporter. Wow, man. Mm-hmm. And these were young high school students who had the run of the place, and they reported on what was going on in their high schools, what were going on in the community.
Yep.
Now, remember, a lot of that, and folks, see, I go back to the Kerner Commission.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that came out of the Kerner Commission.
Right.
Because one of the chapters or one of the studies in the Kerner Commission was that radio, TV, newspapers did not hire mm-hmm. African Americans. That when you heard news or you saw a story or you were exposed to a story, it was always from the eyes of white America.
Right.
And so ownership stations that were owned and operated were challenged to expand the opportunity for African Americans to get into journalism, and that was part of the program. Now, we didn't all realize it at the time, but that was an attempt to expose young people. Now, Donnie Simpson Donnie Simpson left Detroit, and I just saw him. He and I were on a train together going from Washington. He was heading up to New York.
Joe Madison, the Black Eagle, the award-winning national talk show host on Sirius XM Urban View Radio. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at inblackamerica@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.